The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
He's round the goalkeeper, he's done it! Absolutely incredible!
He launched himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Does it tame again?
Crank up the music! Charge a glass! This nation is going to dance all night!
A symbolic save-shy goalkeeper, diminutive defenders, late spring glove wearers, tormented World Cup winners, forlorn figures, rabbits in the headlights, divers, spitters, showboaters, slow coaches, acquired tastes, and one man simply guilty of being too good-looking for this league. Our league, the hardest league in the world. Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this is Football Clichés and the Welcome to the Premier League 11. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 183 of Football Clichés. I'm Adam Hurry and my selection panel are as follows. Charlie Eccleshow joins me first of all. How are you doing?
Very well, how are you?
Not too bad. Alongside you will be James Moore. How's it going?
Yeah, very well, Adam. Thank you.
Before we get stuck into our headline project, some breaking news hot off the Richard Keys press. just going to read this verbatim, Charlie. I was instrumental in getting Graham Souness the Newcastle job, and if you asked him who started his TV career, he'd say Richard Keys, without hesitation.
Yes. Incredible. Yeah, I did read this before, and he just keeps on delivering. It was amazing because he didn't expand on or explain the Newcastle point.
No.
Just went straight. It was like he was too keen to get onto the TV point.
He often does that, so drops it in and lets you do the working out, which I think adds to the mystique of the things that he's claimed to have done. So I think he's quite clever on his part.
He's kind of the Forrest Gump of light entertainment, isn't he now? He seems to have just been like involved in everyone's TV career.
Keys continues, James. And he said, Souness was the first man I sat and drank with after my open heart surgery.
Wow.
I can't work out if that's a boast or not. And on similar lines... an old classic here. Is he a sexist? No. His daughter used to work in our business.
I love that.
That might be the most tenuous.
I mean, that is the how can I hate women my mum's one, Finchy sort of defence.
I think it's even more tenuous than that.
Yeah, maybe.
Madness. Anyway, you are both here on a monumental week for the Premier League, both as a organisation and a concept, I think. It celebrated its 30th birthday in the only way it knows how, Charlie, by having several ex-pros talk about how difficult it is to play in it. there is no finer way to celebrate the Premier League than to kind of puff up its demanding environment, really, is there?
Yeah, I mean, its exceptionalism has been one of the things that has always separated the Premier League, its own sense of self-worth. And it has been well-timed, because we have seen a few players who supposedly just aren't cut out for it. And they have to adapt.
And that pretty much is the soul of the 11 that we're trying to pick today, James. They're kind of the stooges, the fall guys in this enduring Premier League narrative of it being the hardest league in the world and the toughest place to go and the tempo and the intensity. So what we're aiming to do is decide who the most notable players were that didn't fancy it, whose feathers were most famously ruffled, who was urged to cut out that sort of stuff if they were to succeed on these shores, who had to quickly realise that we just don't do this sort of thing in the Premier League of ours, who needed their captain to have a quiet word with them at training. Are you clear enough about what we're trying to do here?
Yeah, I think so. It's coming up with 11 things that Graham Souness hates and then finding a player for each one, right?
Arguably. But a lot of people are probably starting to listen to this episode and think, well, this is quite one-dimensional, isn't it? This is going to be a bit proper football man-y. And it is to an extent, but the supposed demands of the Premier League are much more multi-dimensional than I perhaps thought before. But to try and get us into the spirit of this, I've created perhaps one of the greatest football clichés montages of all. Here, quite simply, is everybody's Welcome to the Premier League.
Welcome to the Premier League. All a little bit quicker.
Welcome to the Premier League.
Welcome to the Premier League.
Well, what an introduction to Premier League football.
He's been in Japan for a year. He doesn't know anything about English football. He's unaware of the demands of our game.
The
they just don't have the excitement of the Premier League.
We were fast becoming like other leagues, where the refs were blowing the whistle all the time, the game didn't flow.
It's the intensity of the French league is nothing like our league.
The pressures of the Premier League when you've never played it and played in France for quite a long time, no disrespect.
He has no experience of English football, he's come from Japan.
He cannot play there in the Premier League. Be very difficult in this league, I think, to actually succeed.
Well, you meant Premier League, don't you? Yeah, that's what we're saying, the Premier League. Yeah.
This is the Premier League, and everyone needs to respect this challenge.
The quality of what the Premier League possesses, really.
The quality that's required in this league.
Our league will be better for it.
I think it's great for our league.
Our game has always been unique. It's always been more meaty, more in your face, more intense.
If you talk about the Premier League, particularly the intensity of this Premier League.
One of the problems is the pace of the game.
How hard is that, what he had to do today, coming to this league for the first time, different pace?
Yeah, very hard, yes. Very hard.
Across the Premier League, he's going to be a marked man.
The centre-halves probably will be there to him. How well do you feel you're adapting to life in the Premier League?
For me, it's clear that he needs to adapt to this kind of football, to this kind of league.
And the people say he's not going to adapt and... In the Premier League.
It's going to be a massive challenge for him to deal with the intensity, the amount of games, the speed of the football compared to what he's been used to.
In the Prem, one mistake, you're done.
The Prem.
Meaty.
Yeah, the entire ego of the Premier League summed up in just under 2 minutes there. So hopefully we are now well-placed, well-poised and well-tuned to select our 11 for the Welcome to the Premier League lineup. Let's start in goal, of course. Charlie, I think we might all be on the same page with this one because I think there's one goalkeeper that perhaps sums up the supposed adaptation period that all players need to undergo.
Well, there's one who I have who I think also coincided with getting rid of a very Premier League-y player. And so this was such a perfect storm. So I'm talking here about Claudio Bravo, who was brought in by Pep Guardiola because Joe Hart, England's brave and sort of up and at him Joe Hart, the king of banter, wasn't deemed good enough with his feet.
Yeah.
You know, and Guardiola came in, and so he brought in his man, Claudio Bravo. And Bravo did have a sort of torrid time. I mean, remember he played against United in a game City did win. I think they won 2-1 in September 2016, and it was open season on him. You know, this guy, welcome to the Premier League, fella. You know, this isn't like the league we're not in Kansas anymore. You know, you're gonna get pressured, you're gonna get fouled, you're gonna get kicked. He then two-footed Rooney or something. He slid in on Rooney because he was so rattled. So he to me feels very welcome to the Premier League.
Okay, interesting. That's one I hadn't thought of, so this is a very good contender. James, what do you think?
Claudio Bravo was the name I had written down, and why I think he's so good is because not only was it welcome to the Premier League for him, but it was also welcome to the Premier League for Pep Guardiola.
Ah.
A month into his time at Man City. The idea that this man had the audacity to come to our league and try and play out from the back is outrageous.
And get rid of Joe Hart.
Yeah, and get rid of our beloved Joe Hart, who, you know, clearly is a far superior footballing mind.
So Bravo was a kind of symbolic
season, yeah. It was definitely, he represented the transition from old Premier League to modern sort of, the way we see the game being played by the big clubs now.
Mm.
And I think that one match that Charlie just mentioned, that Manchester United match, which was Bravo's debut, what kind of really crystallised that transition.
Both compelling cases, actually.
Also, just one more thing in his favour, he went on a save drought. And I think he's the only goalkeeper to go on a save drought. Do you remember the famous Claudio Bravo save drought of 2016-17?
That's astonishing. You can't have a goalkeeper who doesn't save shots in English football. I mean, that's what they're there for. Yeah, this all stacks up very well. I'm surprised neither of you had the same name as me, which was David De Gea, who may lack the immediate kind of symbolism of Claudio Bravo, but I think what he does have is the narrative arc of a player who's not conquered English football, but sort of edged themselves into it. If you remember his early days, he was getting battered around by set-piece specialists. There is one headline here from about 18 months or so into his Manchester United career. It says, Manchester United's David De Gea says he's a glutton for punishment after beefing up. The subhead reads, much clattered keeper has gained muscle by lifting weights and stuffing his face. Much clattered keeper.
I do remember with him, I mean, you're right, Adam, this was a thing that went on and on and on. And I remember there was a game in, I think it was January 2013. And James, you were probably there when Spurs scored a last minute equaliser, I think through Clint Dempsey, and it was a De Gea error.
In the snow, yeah.
In the snow. And De Gea did a big,
which,
like,
he probably hated.
Like, I'm like, it was, the sentiment was, I'm done with this guy. You know, we keep being told that he's really good, but he's just too small, he's too spindly, and he's not fit for our league.
And that was the crux of the De Gea weakness, James, that he was too skinny. He wasn't up to the physical challenge. And as with most players like this, he was sort of sent away to kind of beef up and bulk up for the Premier League, which you know, is not an issue here. It's clearly advantageous to be a physical presence in the Premier League to do so. But the best thing about De Gea beefing up was that not a single media organisation could find two sufficiently clear-cut before and after images to prove it. I've scoured the internet for all these articles of saying De Gea beefed up. There's one picture of him looking a bit, ugh, and then there's one picture of him just happens to be flexing his muscle. That's how it is. The Match of the Day got hold of this, though, this story back in 2013, the idea that De Gea had beefed up in order to tackle the physicality of English football. And all they did was just zoom in on him a bit more in the second picture. It's absolutely astonishing.
What's quite interesting about that is that although he was and is quite sort of rakish, he is at least tall.
Mm.
And you know, I would say the main criticism of goalkeepers coming to our league is they're too small, like too short. And off the top of my head, I can't think of an example now, but I feel, you know, Pepe Reina, maybe, for example, like a short man for a goalkeeper. And I remember that being like an oft-cited criticism of him, that he simply just wasn't tall enough to be able to come out and, you know, claim set pieces against like Sam Allardyce's Bolton or whatever. But De Gea was at least like 6'4" or whatever he is. He's got that in his locker at least.
Well, that's a fair point. And that's what's starting to turn the tide for this for me. But that leads me to an interesting trivia question. Charlie, you can go first with this. What height do you think the smallest ever Premier League goalkeeper was?
That's a really good question.
There's a fair chance you'll never have heard of him.
5'8".
Well, that's annoying because you've undercut the actual answer. James?
5'9"?
5'9" is correct, yes. 5'9", Clive Baker of Ipswich, 1992 Bates. To 1994. 48 games in the Premier League.
Well, people were shorter back then.
Yeah, that's just basic evolution. I mean, I think as well, just with De Gea as well, I think the fact that he had that sort of quite wispy stubble
didn't help
his cause. And also, isn't there a big thing as well about ages? Like, you often, you know, goalkeepers, they don't peak until they're 30, of course. Mm. And De Gea came when he was really young. And I think that added to the sort of distrust around him, not just his sort of slight build.
He's 31 now. Do you think he's peaked yet?
I suspect he has.
It's weird. No one ever mentioned his age. That's the first time anyone has ever mentioned.
But they did when he joined, because he was really young. Yeah, I think there was a sense that he hadn't really paid his dues. You know, who's this guy? You need to sort of earn your stripes before you just get that sort of move to a big Premier League club as a keeper.
John, weighing these two stories up, I think the clincher here is that De Gea, for all his early faults and his continuing sort of weaknesses, he still has a reputation for being an incredibly good shot stopper and has carried Manchester United at certain points. So that kind of undermines his welcome to the Premier League-ness. Whereas Claudio Bravo's story arc was perhaps shorter, but perhaps rather more fitting. So let's go with Claudio Bravo, just for that pep factor as well. So he's our goalkeeper. Now, in defence, it seems that we're struggling for fullbacks. Why, James, would you say that fullbacks don't lend themselves to the welcome to the Premier League narrative as much as their centre-half colleagues?
Yeah, I mean, I guess fullbacks are something, they sit somewhere between like rugged central defenders and the kind of creative players that you expect to see farther up the pitch. So because they kind of straddle the two, or sit somewhere between the two,
they kind of escape it.
You kind of don't really criticise them for being too far off either end of the spectrum, I guess, maybe?
Yeah, I think you might be right.
There's not such an obvious flaw.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, but what fullbacks do we have then?
Well, the first name that came to mind for me was Pascal Tchimbonda, who infamously wore gloves, I would say, from late August through to mid-April, maybe.
Mm.
And I remember that being quite a big bone of contention, particularly in that first season with Wigan. He also then had the temerity to hand in a transfer request. Was it on the pitch at Highbury, the last game?
It was in the dressing room, I think, before the final game.
Let's not exaggerate. But it, yeah, those two things combined, I remember making him quite like a big sort of hate figure early on.
But he, to me, was a kind of outlier of glove wearers, Charlie, because he was kind of unapologetic. He wasn't wearing gloves because he was a bit fragile. It was just, he was just more comfortable. But he was fairly all action, right? He wasn't a shrinking violet, was he, Charlie? He was fairly up for it.
Yeah, stylistically, he suited our league quite well. I mean, he was sort of, you know, he was diving into tackles and this sort of thing. But I know what James means. I'm sure it was I'm sure it would have been said by plenty of proper football men, how can you have a fullback wearing gloves?
That was definitely a preoccupation in that first season. Maybe the first season at Spurs as well. In particular, it was all anyone would ever say about him, that he wore gloves. It was just his thing.
I've got a couple. One is Khaled Boularouz, who this is a slightly left field one. But if you remember, he joined Chelsea in 2006 off the back of that game against Portugal, Holland Portugal in the World Cup, and everyone got sent off, and it was horribly violent and all of this. And I think there was a sense like, is this guy just like a bit of a nut? Is he, you know, can he, you know...
Nicknamed the Cannibal.
Exactly. Is he going to be too frenzied for our league? And wow. So it proved in the end, because he got sent off late on in that season against Arsenal. And I think he only lasted that season. And then on a similar vein of being a bit too... Although this guy actually did do well, but a bit too sort of pugnacious, was Tarico, the Spurs fullback.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Who was kind of like, you've got to stop slapping Graham Lasso every time that you play Chelsea. Like, that's not okay.
Yeah, but he became too much of a cult figure, didn't he?
Maybe,
he was
truly
welcomed into the Premier League. Fans quite liked him for that.
Crucially, Tarico played in a football league before the Premier League. So grounding maybe preclude him from this team?
Maybe.
I would say
just to go
so.
Back... To Boularouz as well. He did wear number 9 at centre-back, didn't he?
Did.
Which I'm sure proper football men would not approve of.
Did a number on Ronaldinho, though, for Chelsea, though, so famously. So that helps his case. I think we may have to go for a three-man defensive line here, just because I feel like welcome to the Premier League-ness lends itself to the early rumblings of a centre-half in the Premier League. The obvious candidate here, the most topical one of all, perhaps even the inspiration for this lineup alone, is Lisandro Martinez, who we've discussed a lot on this podcast seemingly already, Charlie, but I don't remember Chris Perry getting the sort of brief when he was getting tipped for an England cap in the late 1990s, the former 5'9" Wimbledon ace.
Yeah, it's a good point. Or Cannavaro, not that he ever played in the Premier League, but you know, you can be short, famously, and be a good centre-back. I think Martinez he's sort of the poster boy for this team, isn't he? I mean, the fact that we were even preempting it before he joined shows how much everyone saw this culture war coming.
I feel bad for the butcher of Amsterdam, James, that he's being already presented as this kind of weakling in the Premier League. Is it premature, do you think? Some people seem to think that we're calling this too early for him.
Well, normally I would say yes, but given he's, what, like a sort of 24-year-old bloke, he's not going to get any taller, is he? Like, there's not really a resolution to that. I mean, you know, you can, if you're too slow, you can do a bit of fitness work and maybe get a bit quicker. If you're David De Gea getting, you know, bundled at set pieces, you can work
you can't
in the
bulk
gym
upwards.
Maybe.
Is that what you're saying?
There's no way he's ever going to be able to remedy it.
That's true.
I mean, he's knackered, isn't he?
Well, breaking an Adam ban, like Bart tries to do it in The Simpsons when he's trying to get the radioactive man role.
Indeed.
So I do wonder if Lissandro will do that. I mean, what will save him is if they change the system, I would have thought. But also, Adam, it is too early. But that's the point, I think, that, you know, the joy is of writing these players not being ready for our league is how quickly they are written off.
Oh, it can absolutely be a one game thing. I'm not worried about that.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of other kind of supposedly fancy Dan centre halves who came to the Premier League and got immediately bullied out of it. Frank Leboeuf, I think there was a game against Wimbledon for Chelsea where Wimbledon won 4-2 at Stamford Bridge, and he ended up with a golf ball sized lump on his forehead, thanks to Robbie Earle being a little bit braver in a 50-50 challenge to score. And he was quite famed for his kind of passing and stuff. He wasn't sort of a rugged defender, James. So I think he could be a candidate here.
I guess with someone like that, you just see his success so much that this kind of seems so much at the forefront of your mind that it's hard to escape that. Do you know what I mean? Whereas, can I throw a left field option at you? And you mentioned it could be based on one game, but what about a guy who didn't play any games in the Premier League? In fact, didn't appear for the club that he joined at all. I give you the name of Florian Morange, who, yep, you're right to have that facial expression. He joined Crystal Palace in 2013, but because they signed 14 players that summer, they didn't register him in the squad.
Oh, him.
So they released him by, like, October. And Ian Holloway suggested the reason was that he was too slow for the Premier League.
Oh, interesting. I was thinking about trying to think of some players who'd been labelled as too slow for the Premier League. So I'm glad you mentioned him. And it is quite a pathetic story, isn't it? But having not played in the Premier League to demonstrate it, I feel like we have to count him out. But it is a nice suggestion.
Can I read you a pathetic quote, though?
Yeah.
This is from Florian Morand, whose name I imagine I've completely butchered. I've never been presented to the press. I have never had an official photo. And I'm still waiting for my club suit. I stayed for 15 days in a hotel before finding somewhere to live, and the club told me I had to pick up the bill. Oh, this guy's just been completely tired. Terrible.
He was barely there, was he? That is pathetic.
And another option on the sort of Martinez forebear is Daley Blind, who, again, was a sort of like, ooh, isn't he cultured with his left foot and his short stature and he comes from Ajax, but, you know, welcome to our league, fella.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like this guy might be a slam dunk for us, just because there is one abiding image of him that absolutely screams welcome to the Premier League. And this is from listener Mark Small, who says Roque Jr. went from winning the World Cup in 2002 and signed for Leeds on loan in 2003. Enter Duncan Ferguson on a summer afternoon. And a picture of his shirt torn off his shoulder. We have to have Roque Jr. here. That no picture in Premier League history, James, screams welcome to the Premier League more than that.
Yeah, that is entirely spot on. And you're right, he looked like an incredible coup for Leeds, but was utterly dreadful. And that was the season they got relegated, wasn't it, I think? 2003, 2004?
Yeah.
That just adds to the calamity of it. Mm.
He was what, part of their lone army. Yeah, he was awful. I think it was more he was just really bad.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, that look of terror, I think, alone justifies it. Charlie, I've got a quote for you. I just want you to guess who the Premier League debutant was. I suffered. My ego got smashed. I really suffered, honestly. Playing against opponent X, opponent Y, big guys, the flick, the fighting spirit, playing against Team Z, team other letter, the long ball, I was unable to intimidate them. In other country X and other country Y, I was a strong guy. I would look the strikers in the eye and show there's nothing for you today. And the player would look nothing. Down and accept that I had won. But in England, no. The guy's ready for a fight. The striker will tackle you. I was depressed for 4 months.
Oh, wow. I don't know. Should I know?
Maybe.
Is there sort of a red flag in that? Winston Bogard?
Not 100 million miles away. James, would you care to hazard a guess?
Because you've said that, I'm going to guess it's someone at Chelsea. So I'll say Marcel Desailly.
Desailly is correct.
Wow.
Just to show that it isn't all about sort of gambly signings from abroad that we think might be able to style it out in the Premier League. This is about a proven winner, a World Cup winner, and not in a Roque Jr. context either.
And not someone you'd expect to be kind of overawed by the physical challenge either. Mm. It's like a big bloke.
Got absolutely smashed by Dion Dublin on his debut. I'm tempted to put Desailly in.
That's good.
Alongside Roque Jr. And we have to have Lisandro Martinez just for the ongoing narrative.
Yeah, that is a big surprise. I really wouldn't have...
He went on to have sort of other difficulties. I mean, sort of the Sunderland game away where Quinn gave him a doing over, Charlie. So I feel like he had a kind of enduring track record of just not quite getting to grips with the Premier League. Our league. It's not for everybody.
There are no 6'7" centre forwards in Serie A, are there?
Nope. Right, three-man back line sorted. Surprise goalkeeper in place too. Let's move into midfield. Will Hardy, Charlie, comes in straight away with Jose Antonio Reyes versus the brothers Neville. Very much a welcome to English football story, this, wasn't it? I mean, the fact that they started sort of taking it in turns to batter him.
Yeah, I mean, this was as well. This is that game. I mean, he'd actually been in the Premier League for a little while. Come on, it's like 8 months. But that game is cited as, did Reyes ever fully recover from that? He took such a battering that day. And it was and Phil Neville used to be used in this kind of hatchet man role for Fergie against Arsenal. I think that is a good shout.
It's the sheer glee, though, James, that the Neville brothers clearly took in doing it. I think it's the clincher here.
And the fact it was obviously like a premeditated tactic. So, I mean, Charlie's right. It was a good few months into his time in England, but it's clearly something they'd kind of identified as being a weakness in his game in previous matches that they could get in his face.
But if we're looking for a more well-rounded option from that particular team, from that particular era, Charlie, what about Robert Pires? Because we had the diving, we had that penalty, which was so egregious, the one he took with Thierry Henry, that he had Danny Mills right up in his face, essentially saying, you can't do that.
Yeah.
/ in English football. And then listener Wenger Brawl writes in and says Wenger benched him in his first match versus Sunderland so he could see how physical the league was. I mean, that is...
I was going to say, that is always cited.
Welcome to the Premier League, but from a distance.
Yeah, that it was like, you won't be ready for this. And famously, Perez watched it, did that thing that I was talking about before of going like... with his mouth, as if to say, what have I signed up for? And I guess, though, the fact that it worked... I don't know, the fact that it worked out for him and he learned and he grew to embrace the Premier League and, you know... Less than 2 years after that debut, he had Andy Gray applauding him on air. So I don't know. I don't know if the fact that Reyes didn't really fully recover in English football, maybe sort of swings it his way.
Yeah, I think that penalty talk about against Manchester City, I mean, I had completely forgotten about that. But yeah, you're right. Danny Mills' reaction says it all. The fact that the guy who had actually benefited from this terrible penalty miss was so annoyed that he had to have a guy at him on the pitch.
So affronted. I mean,
that says it all, doesn't it?
Also, Adam, I watched recently on Gary Neville's Soccer Box, which is I really enjoy. I think it's a great programme. But he had Perez on. And you could tell that even though, you know, bygones be bygones, Neville still had that little scrappy instinct and he did still enjoy it. But Perez didn't care, but he kept saying things like, you know, you were a bit soft though, weren't you, Perez? He was like, yeah, I guess. So I think it still feels a bit, I think it's a bit of a sore point for the Premier League that he did sort of conquer it despite wearing gloves and taking silly penalties and all of that.
Having long hair, longish
hair. Having long hair, a silly beard.
Yeah, absolutely. We've talked about a few players, James, so far, who weren't fancied in the Premier League and then conquered it to an extent. Players who weren't fancied in the Premier League and absolutely didn't conquer it and sort of drifted off straight away. But PCB Enthusiast offers up this little curiosity. There's a strong case for James Rodriguez, he says. So much talk about when he signed about how he couldn't handle the physical demands and pressing of the Premier League. Started brilliantly, then it got cold and he didn't fancy it anymore. So quite the roller coaster there, but is it a strong enough case?
I don't know. I don't really remember people suggesting that he couldn't hack the Premier League. I think it was thought it was a busted flush by that point, didn't they? I thought it was more that they thought his career had already peaked and he was on the wane, and that's why he was joining Everton.
I don't.
To my memory, anyway,
it may only have been Keezy, but I do remember. I've got Rodriguez on my list because I do remember it being quite a funny journey of people saying stuff like that, or at least Keezy or people like that, and me thinking, "God, this is such a dated view." Like as if it really works like that. And then, to be fair, kind of did work out exactly as those people were saying, which was quite funny.
Yeah. Well, let's keep him in our minds.
Rubinho being another one of that ilk that you know was good until it got cold. People loved him not being good. I felt people were really had it in for Rubinho, who I thought was such an entertaining player.
This is a crucial part of it, Charlie. The glee, collective glee, when people can't make it in our league.
And I think he gave a lot of people a lot of happiness when he sort of...
Well, Emerson at Middlesbrough was maybe the prototype for that because he also kind of seemingly went off the boil a bit when it got a bit cold. Didn't he disappear for a little bit mid-season and then kind of come back when they were in cup finals and stuff? So he kind of felt like the prototype for that sort of moral panic of foreign player who might not like the possibility of it snowing a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We haven't talked about the weather yet. I mean, yeah. And maybe Middlesbrough simply existed in the mid-90s just to test out or bring into the sort of collective consciousness the weather aspect of Welcome to the Premier League. Quick story for you first before I launch into two very solid-looking names. Ralph Hanna writes in and says, Diego Gavilan, the former Newcastle and Paraguay midfielder, once told me that when Yap Stam took him and the ball out as he got his first run at the defender, he looked over to him and said, "Welcome to the Premier League." So someone actually has said it. Which I think is superb.
Is
I don't know why anyone would make that story up, so I'm inclined to believe that it definitely happened. That almost alone lends him good candidacy for this team. But, Charlie, name number one. Gavin Bergen writes in, is it Angel Di Maria, who was, according to one unnamed former United teammate, talented but a complete fanny.
The slight difference with him... This was just my sense. People wanted him to succeed a little more than they did someone like Rubinho. Because Rubinho, I think there was a flashiness element to someone like Rubinho, which I'm not sure Di Maria had. Like Di Maria, people might have enjoyed the fact that he was too scrawny for the Premier League, but he never seemed especially arrogant or anything like that, which I think is part of the welcome to the Premier League. That, you know, someone like Rubinho, oh, you think you're so good? You think you can just come in and dominate our league? So for me personally, I didn't feel that with Di Maria in quite the same way.
Okay, we'll keep him on ice for the moment there. James, how about this one from Ben Davis? Juan Sebastian Verón for committing the heinous crime of standing and admiring his own pass. So sprinting off up the pitch immediately after making it. So there is this kind of there is this kind of heavy implication that Varane just couldn't hack English football, which came to its most famous head, of course, with the with that famous quote from Alex Ferguson. Now, the Telegraph's Sam Wallace unearthed the audio of this earlier this year. No one had ever heard it before, and it's exactly as good as your mind would always assume.
Generally, about Varane, you're irritated by the speculation.
There you go, no fucking sorry. He's a fucking great player. He's a fucking idiot.
So, yeah, just to recap then, Ferguson's saying he's a fucking great player. Yous are all fucking idiots. Which I don't really have. I don't actually think James had the intended effect. I mean, it didn't change anybody's minds. If anything, I just think it made them more embedded in their views because it just felt like a desperate defence.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this was kind of in a period where Fergie was definitely up against it and that these decisions were being questioned in a way that maybe they hadn't been in previous years. And how long after that was it that they flogged him? I mean, how long was
he
it?
He lasted another
years
year.
At United? Okay. Yeah, so he did kind of stick it out for a second season, but I mean, I don't think history dictates that he was correct, at least in terms of how well he played for Manchester United. I mean, I don't really, was he good at Chelsea either, really?
No, not really. But what crucially there, James, as well, is that he was still good often in the Champions League at this period. Yeah. Like against Deportivo in this season, just before he scored a really, really nice goal. I think it was a chip. And I think that burnishes his not sort of Premier League ready credentials, because it was like clearly he was still a great player, and when it was the right sort of pace of the game he could do it, but he didn't seem to be able to do it at the higher, more frenetic Premier League pace.
Well, let's definitely have Varane then alongside Pires. What other names have you got for me?
Well, I was thinking, I mean, we've had one too short centre back, but I think this player was too small in a slightly different way. Luka Modric.
Yeah, he was on my list.
There was a lot of chat of him being too waif to play
right
in a busy central midfield in the Premier League. Online, there's a lot of sort of suggestions that Arsene Wenger said he wasn't big enough, but there aren't actually any quotes. So I don't know whether that's a bit of an old wives' tale, but certainly people seem to be thinking at the time that that's what he thought.
And he had his leg broken by Lee Bowyer.
Yeah, so that was the start of the second season.
Yeah.
And the kind of upshot of that was that he came back into the team. Gareth Bale had come into the team. Asu Okoto had gone to left back. So Modric ended up having played on the left wing in the first season, then going back into central midfield, the position he's basically played for the 12 years since. And clearly doing very well. You know, without being too flippant about it, I don't imagine growing up in Croatia in the late 80s, early 90s was like particularly easy. And I don't imagine playing in the Croatian league as a young, small man.
That's got nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with it.
Was particularly easy. So going to the Premier League and playing against, like, you know,
Lee Bowyer
or whoever else, despite having his leg broken in that game, I don't imagine that was too daunting for him.
Fair enough.
I could be wrong.
But and I think as well, because he was thought of as this, whether rightly or wrongly, as a sort of flighty winger. The fact that he not only made it in the Premier League, but he did so as a central midfielder, did seem improbable. I mean, I've got a few other, these are different categories. I mean, you talked, Adam, about people being too slow.
Yeah.
So one option there is Ivan Campo, who came over from winning the Champions League with Real Madrid, but was thought of as like, I mean, this guy, he's sort of, you know, he's a bit of a stroller, just kind of ambles around the place, and ended up being part of that quite good.
Yeah,
very
he seemed to quite enjoy himself.
Bolton
as far as
team.
I can
remember. And I seem to remember actually, the reason I quite like him is it felt like him and the Premier League sort of they got to quite like each other by the end.
Yeah.
Having initially it seemed like such a bad fit.
Sort of prototype and, David Luiz, really.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then on the flip side, there were players who were too quick.
Too quick for the Premier League.
I'll tell you
if anything.
I'll tell you I'm thinking of here. The Danish
player. I knew it was going to be bloody Dennis Romadal.
Dennis Romadal, 11.9. Or was it 10.9? Maybe it was even 10.9 could run the 100 metres.
I've seen a lot of differing times.
I think it was 10.9. Yeah, it was either 10.9 or 11.2. Let's go with 10.9. And his compatriot Jesper Gronkjær. And they were both these sort of rapid wingers who could maybe do it elsewhere. But you need a lot more guile and craft in our league, Sonny. You can't just be quick.
These are good left field shouts, actually. I'm quite intrigued by this idea of being... it'll be a tough sell if we ever publish this 11. People can point it and go, what? But I like the logic. James, can you do any advance on Dennis Romadal?
Yeah, I would say arguably the best player to play in the Premier League. Maybe not on the basis of his Premier League performances, but in his career in general. Cristiano Ronaldo, in that first season at Manchester United as a 19-year-old, was just getting hammered for months and months and months of doing too many stepovers.
With
and
his silly hair.
By the way, it was insane the number of stepovers he was doing. It was ludicrous. He was just being absolutely slaughtered on Match of the Day and in the papers for like standing up the fullback and then doing like sort of a dozen step overs and then like laying the ball back to Paul Scholes or whatever.
Do you know what? Do you know what might clinch it for me here is that I think Cristiano Ronaldo might well be responsible or the genesis of the very first football meme, or at least the very first football meme that I ever saw, which was that kind of pen drawing in a GIF of a player doing loads of stepovers and then just falling over. And it was really crude, but it did its job in sort of 2004. Should we just have it on that basis alone? Go on then.
Seems like a good basis.
Brilliant stuff. What a team this is so far.
Hello, I'm Ian Irving, host of the Athletic's Manchester United podcast, Talk of the Devils. Join me, Andy Mitten, Laurie Whitwell and Carl Anker every week, but particularly this week, as we gear up to the huge Liverpool game at Old Trafford on Monday night. We'll preview that match without paying any reference to our meeting with our rivals from last season, of course, and we'll also assess the latest twists and turns in Manchester United's roller coaster of a summer transfer window. You won't get better insight on United anywhere else, and as you'll find, you won't get better cocktails chat either. Just search for Talk of the Devils wherever you get your podcasts.
To your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
Right then, time to finally look at our forward line. So many options here for fancy Dans and soft touches and the rest. So where do we begin? Charlie, you've already made a spirited case for Robinho so far. So
yeah, if he's playing in that more advanced role.
Yeah, I would have him in the forward line if we did want him, certainly. Interesting debate to be had for this first one from Belly85, James. He says, Paolo Di Canio. All right, yes, he pushed a referee over, which you don't do in this country, but he also caught the ball that time, so...
Yeah, that's a real moral dilemma.
Yeah.
I just kind of think, and again, similar to Rico, because he had come from Scotland, it kind of felt like the perception would have been that he had that kind of, you know, grounding in British football, British culture. Yeah, exactly. So he'd kind of proven himself, probably at an even tougher proving ground that he had what it took to play in the Premier League.
Yeah, agreed. If you're going to be badly behaved to defy the Premier League moral standards, you're going to have to do a lot worse, a lot more things than that, I think.
I think, crucially, you're going to have to do it in a more sneaky way, whereas he was quite aggressive and hot-headed, which, yes, we'll probably get onto, there are some issues there, but that's a lot less frowned upon than if he was, say, a diver or was asking for players to be booked or something like that. That's far more beyond the pale in our eyes.
Other possible names, Brad says Alvaro Morata comes to mind immediately. Charlie, kind of this kind of sort of, pretty boy who just can't hack it. Because he did look increasingly forlorn in the Premier League, which I think helps.
Yeah, that's a good one. Because I always felt quite sad for him because people did seem to be really relishing his misfortune. Yeah, that's a good category. I mean, one that you raised, Adam, you weren't sure of, but I think is really good for bringing in another element, is Jürgen Klinsmann, because of the whole diving thing. That was a real, not in this league, not in our league. You can't dive.
I don't think there's ever been a greater pre-debut moral panic over a foreign Premier League player than Jürgen Klinsmann. I can't think of anyone who's had that baggage come with them before they've even played a game. And looking back now, Charlie, it's obviously almost cartoonish. And it is cartoonish, actually. So we'll never see the likes of that again. But it's too strong to ignore, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's a really good one, because I think that it's such a specific thing and it's so specific to him, the fact that he did the celebration. And it's so offensive to our moral sensibilities.
James, here's a quote from Henry Winter in The Independent at the time, back in 1994. Klinsmann is intelligent enough to know that other club supporters will already be working on diving chants. It can only be a matter of time before he's big, he's blonde, he practices in the pond, is heard around Highbury. Only a matter of time, apparently.
Only a matter of time.
Still waiting.
I mean, he did head it off at the pass in his press conference, didn't he?
Would you like to hear the clip?
I'd love to.
I've unearthed it.
In England, a reputation preceded him as someone with a penchant for theatrical falls in the penalty area. At his first press conference, he diffused the issue superbly.
I can ask you a question. I just wanted to ask if there's any diving school in London.
They loved it, didn't they, James? They absolutely loved it. That is ice broken.
That really speaks for the thing you've talked about before about how like low the bar is for jokes in press conferences. Because is, you know, it's fine. I mean, you don't expect it in those circumstances, but they lapped it up.
It took a little bit of guts, to be fair. He's on the front foot there. Not many players would kind of do that. Say, guys, I just want to address... You know, obviously he did it with a joke, but he's basically fronting up to it, which is quite funny.
And particularly back then, when I think, you know, if we're being honest, like the perception of German people in England, insanely, was still quite bad. You know, we saw the front page of the Mirror before that Euro 96 game, which is 2 years after this. Pretty grim. So, yeah, that must have been pretty daunting for him, actually, to be in a room full of English journalists.
I mean, generally speaking, the banter around Klinsmann at that time, Charlie, was really weird. People turned up, allegedly, to his debut against Sheffield Wednesday wearing scuba masks. Like, the commitment. The commitment to this.
Oh, imagine.
What's that for?
Wearing that on the train. It's been like, oh, this is so uncomfortable. I'm so hot.
But trust me. Yeah. It's going to be great. Okay, so... A running theme of this team is kind of physical weakness, and there's been a sprinkling of also kind of perceived moral weaknesses, unsporting behaviour. But we might need to go a little bit more extreme than that. George Reed writes in, there was a lot of cut that stuff out with Elhadj Diouf. Aside from being dreadful, the only Liverpool number nine to go a season without scoring, his general behaviour was not suitable for our shores.
That's a really good shout, actually, because I was saying before that generally it's the... Well, actually, or maybe this does tie into that, you know, that people like Di Canio are okay, but maybe he was seen as quite sneaky. I mean, there was spitting as well, which is always...
Well, it's the ultimate sin in English.
That's horrific. Exactly.
It's the worst thing you can do to a fellow pro.
Yeah, it really is. Mm. He dived as well. I mean, he kind of did a bit of everything. Yeah, no, that's a good... I'm trying to think if there's anyone else on a par with him, but that's a good shout.
Yeah, I feel like we do need a genuine bad boy in our front line.
Well, I think as well there should be room for the hothead, because Nunes, which I think is a bit ridiculous, I was saying this yesterday, that Nunes's red card feels more like a welcome to Serie A in the 90s or welcome to La Liga with Godin or someone like that. It doesn't feel so our league, you know. I think our league would be more, he kept getting kicked and he was going down asking the ref for more protection. That would be welcome to our league. But I think maybe someone like him or a Mitrovic. Mm. I feel like Mitrovic got sent off for, like, you know, headbutt. You know, you can't react is a thing, isn't it?
James, the welcome to the Premier League has had an absolute field day with Darwin Nunez after the Crystal Palace game. It really was manna from heaven for them.
Yeah, but I mean, as Charlie says, I just don't think it's applicable. It isn't, is it? I mean...
It's an isolated incident. It could have happened anywhere, is basically what you're saying.
But yeah, exactly, yeah. I just don't think, you know, we've seen English players do similar things for years and years and years. I mean, it's the kind of thing you would expect to happen in a first division game in the 1980s or whatever.
If it had been a kind of Martin Keown figure and not Joachim Andersen, then maybe that would have helped.
Maybe,
but
a guy who's played in the Premier League for 1 year. Yeah, need to be someone a bit more our league than that.
I agree.
But also, I feel like Keown would be fouling him more. It would be more the aggression than the
not quite
provocation.
So in our front line so far, we've got a player who came with overblown baggage. We have a genuine bad boy who tore away at the moral fibre of the Premier League, self-proclaimed. Perhaps we still need room for someone who was just perceived as weak and couldn't hack it. How about this? Ben Bagwell says Timo Werner for sure gets in for his post-match interview after his debut at Brighton.
Although you were injured early on in the game, how did you find the game, the pace of it, and the difference between what you're used to?
Yeah, Premier League is different football, because I think defenders, I never play against three defenders like this, so tall, so much, big, massive defenders.
Just for the sheer starkness of the quote, James, just, I've never played against defenders this big before. It's almost too good for my, oh my God, this is my first taste of Premier League.
I mean, he's talking about Dan Byrne though, right? I think.
Does he count?
I think it's fair enough if you're talking about someone the size of him.
I think Byrne's a lot more imposing than people give him credit for. He's a big old guy.
Yeah. Exactly.
Not just a beanpole.
Well, can I throw in another player with another reason? Possibly the cardinal sin of foreign players. Not learning the language.
Oh.
You know, if you look at someone like Carlos Tevez, I think there's a regular criticism of him. And I think the reality of it really is, like, don't want to do interviews, so don't bother talking to me. Which is fair enough. And Sergio Aguero as well, I think, is a thing that's often said of him, that, you know, oh, he's been here for 8-9 years and he doesn't speak a word of English.
I admire this. Obviously,
he spoke loads of English. Mm. Like Pochettino, you know, when he first went to Southampton, because he didn't want to do press conferences.
I think it's an underrated breath of fresh air, Charlie, Sergio Aguero refusing to speak English, because, one, easier life for him, plays football, gets to go away and enjoy his life. Other than that, for the rest of us, we don't have to hear stuff like, yeah, great to score today. But the 3 points is the most important thing. And I'm just looking forward to Watford away on Tuesday. It's subtle, subtle. That just didn't need to hear it. A breath of fresh air, a void we didn't need filling is essentially what I'm trying to say here.
But that's a good subgenre that James raises, because that definitely was a thing with Tevez. You know, we just don't know him. You know, it's as if we sort of have a right to.
We own you.
Yeah, exactly. And then we got to know Aguero in All or Nothing at his son's birthday party, and it was all quite bleak, I seem to remember.
Right, I'm not entirely happy with Werner being our weakling in the front line, so we might have to change tack here. And maybe just to prove in some weird way that it isn't all about negative preconceptions, it's not all about negative characteristics or perceived weaknesses. Maybe some players sometimes are deemed to be too good in one department. I bring to you West Ham's 19-year-old Portuguese starlet of the mid-1990s, Danny. And, do you know, I went looking for the infamous Harry Redknapp quote, which may or may not have taken place. I didn't find it, but I found the next best thing. What a weird little country we are.
Now, if you've seen the papers this morning, they're all quite strong in the line that daughters have to be locked up. They call you the Portuguese playboy and all this sort of thing. What do you make of all that?
No, if I was a playboy, I wouldn't come here to play football. I would go to models or something. I'm here to play football. That's what I want to do.
So that Harry Redknapp has nothing to worry about in that case?
No.
Just an absolutely baffling line of questioning.
The follow-up as well.
Awful. I want to put Danny into our team just for being the standout candidate for being the only player ever to have been essentially claimed to be too good looking to play in the Premier League. How do you both feel about that? Too vacuous? Too empty?
I'm trying to... I think that's fine. I'm trying to think. Wasn't Enrique de Lucas at Chelsea, wasn't he deemed sort of very, very handsome, and that might sort of affect how tough he was?
Yeah, he had a bit of a kind of sort of late 90s new metal look about him.
I mean, like, Giroud was deemed a bit of a pretty boy. Like, I think it's enough of a theme that's run through the Premier League for Danny to be included.
Yeah, I can see that.
Giroud probably conquered quite a lot of tacks here. He's slow, good looking, but then of course scored goals and was tall, so that kind of doesn't, and he, you know, spoke good English, so that didn't help. 50-50 case for him. Well, Danny it is then. Let's go with that, just for the hell of it. Let's run through our little team before we pick our manager. In goal, the surprise choice, Claudio Bravo, just edging out David De Gea, another disappointment for the Manchester United man. In defence, Lisandro Martinez, the diminutive Lisandro Martinez, Roque Jr. and Marcel Desailly. In midfield, Robert Pires, Juan Sebastian Veron, Cristiano Ronaldo and Luka Modric, I think we'll squeeze into. Up front, Jürgen Klinsmann, El Hadj Diouf, and Danny. Well, what a great front line.
That's,
I think,
a great
front
team.
Line's the real crown of this, isn't it?
Good variety up front.
Yeah. So we want a manager for this rabble, as we so often do. Thought about Bob Bradley. Maybe I thought he was too obvious a case. Thought about Frank de Boer, you know, on a footballing level. Just,
I mean, Wenger has to be, surely.
Yeah,
Canada. Sure. Comes in from Japan.
Should we hear the Japan clip? Go and get the Japan clip.
Straightforward. He has no experience of English football. He's come from Japan and is into English football and is now telling everybody in England how to organise their football. Unless you've been in a situation, unless you've had the experience of being in the situation we were there some years ago, playing 4 games in 8 days, then I think you should keep his mouth shut. Firmly shut.
Japan.
I love the shut, firmly shut.
Yeah, there is simply no other manager for this team than Arsene Wenger. Probably one of his best furious faces as well, Ferguson there. Just absolutely seething. Great team. I think we've nailed the concept. We never have to do this again. Thanks to you, Charlie Eccleshare.
Thank you.
And thanks to you, James Moore.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll be back with the adjudication panel next week. Cheers.
The Athletic.